You're listening to The Job, a talk show about design, music, business, culture, and Portland, featuring interesting interviews with interesting people and brought to you by Need More Designs. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, because we're running a day behind. This is episode number 8. I'm Ray Briglib. My guest today on the show is creative consultant Jen Armbrust of Armbrust & Company, who's going to give us some free advice. But first, let's chat with Candace here in the studio. Good morning, Candace.
Good morning, Ray.
How are you?
I am doing fabulous. How are you?
I've never, ever been better.
I stayed up late last night decorating the house for a 4-year-old's birthday.
Happy birthday, Zoe.
Happy birthday.
Today's Zoe's birthday.
Yep, 4.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to mention right up front that we are hiring a web developer since... you might be listening to this podcast soon. We probably still are. Check out our website or just check out Need More on Twitter and help us spread the word.
We're a fun group to work with.
Yeah, we are. We are. We record podcasts. That's fun.
There's always fruit on the table.
Yeah, fruit. If you need any, need I say more? We also have good... Actually, coffee's been terrible, but we're going to get back to good coffee.
Right. This experiment with not so good coffee is not working.
Yeah.
I don't want to name any names, but we're not drinking that coffee anymore.
No, and only talk about good coffee. I'm thinking that next week on the show we'll have a special guest, but I'm not going to say who it is.
Really?
Yeah. The coffee reminded me of that.
Mystery. Mm-hmm.
You could probably figure it out from our Twitter account. Any interesting projects you want to talk about, Candace?
Well, the studio is awfully busy right now, but I would say one project I am extremely excited about is that, we've been talking for a long time about having time to do a pro bono project every year.
Yes.
Yeah. That's kind of always been a goal of ours. And so this is, I think, the first year that we're really going for it.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, really going for it.
So I was on Facebook a couple weeks ago, and I was seeing all of these photos of this lovely rainbow house, the Quality House, that has just been painted and purchased. It's right across the street from the Westboro Baptist Church, who I think we probably all know.
Well, yeah, you've probably heard of them.
They're known for not spreading peace.
Right.
So this great nonprofit, Planting Peace, purchased the house next door and painted it rainbow colors, and they are basing out of that house a number of equality and anti-bullying initiatives. I just think what they're doing is fabulous.
Yeah.
Just this really positive message. And so we are going to be making the website for them. And we're all just super thrilled here in the studio.
Yeah.
We basically reached out to them and asked if we could be a part of what they were doing, if we could make the website, and they said yes.
We're very excited. It's
so
a good
excited.
Cause. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, one of those days where it felt really good to have a business where you could do something like that. Right? I felt really we'd grown up a little bit.
Maybe that's a good reason to work for Need More, too.
Yeah.
We're good people, and we're trying to do good things.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Speaking of good people doing good things.
Yes. Jen Armbrust, our guest today, is a creative force of nature, and probably one of the most fascinating people that I know. I met Jen when she settled in Portland. I think I met her at least, I don't want to say, a long time ago. This is before she opened her gallery and boutique Motel. For years, Motel was definitely a must-visit stop in downtown Portland. Very, very cool place. Always ran into interesting people there. Always wonderful shows happening. Had a lot of friends show there. Jen grew restless and moved to New York City for a while, eventually settling back in Portland, I'm happy to say. She has been advising creatives in person with her free advice series at the National Gallery, and she's going to share some free advice with you right now. Enjoy. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Ray.
Thank you for being on our show today. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your history, where you're from?
I grew up in Olympia, Washington. I was also born there, and I lived there for the first 22 years of my life, because not only did I attend elementary, junior high, and high school there, I went to the Evergreen State College. So, Olympia native for sure. And I moved straight from Olympia to Portland in 2001. And I've pretty much lived here ever since, except for 14 months where I lived in New York City about 4 years ago.
Okay. And so you prefer Portland to New York City personally?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little.
I had to go there to figure that out though.
Sure. That makes sense. What brought you to New York? Just a change of scenery?
Yeah, I had been living in Portland at that point for about 6 years, and I had had a gallery for 5 years of that down in Chinatown. It was called Motel, and the gallery sort of ran its course, and I closed it at the end of 07, and sort of during the last half of that, I've been doing some freelance web design in the evenings in addition to running the gallery during the day. You know, I was just really feeling my time coming to a close with the gallery. So I closed that and I was sort of spinning my wheels. I was doing freelance and I did not know what to do with myself. And I really felt like Portland had nothing to offer me. I just couldn't see how to grow here. And one of my best friends, Laurel, who used to own a gallery called Small A Projects, she was moving to New York at that time, which was where she was from, and her mother lived there, and her partner had been there for a while working. He's a brewer. So she was going to join him, and I almost nearly literally rode her coattails. I shared her moving van. I gave her $1,000 to throw my stuff in the back. And I said, does your mom need a house sitter this summer? Because I knew her mother went out of the country for the summers. So I sort of sneaked into New York that way and put my stuff in storage in Long Island City and house sat for Laurel's mom for 2 months and then lived in Harlem for a year. And I moved 3 weeks before the market crashed. Mm. So I was there during the recession, and it was a painful year. It was a tough year. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot. And at the end of it, I came back with sort of a whole new renewed appreciation for Portland. I think above and beyond everything else, I was just really happy to be back near so many people I loved, and my family's in Washington. It was great to be near my family. I didn't come back the whole time I was gone. Mm-hmm. And I came back and started freelancing. So mm-hmm. that was sort of the trajectory of New York back to Portland.
So Motel, what inspired you to open an art gallery in the first place?
Well, the year was 2002, and you know, I know you've been here for a while because I remember you from my bartending days when I worked at Dots in Southeast. Yeah. And I studied critical theory in college, and I grew up in Olympia, which had just a really thriving DIY music scene. I got here, I needed a break from school and from working so hard. I did bartending, and I sort of hung out and discovered how much I really loved art. And also saw sort of this gaping hole. There were a lot of established galleries in Portland at that time, and like Liz Leach and Ogden, and sort of this older generation showing a lot of regional art. And there just seemed to be a real vacuum for venues that were showing what in my mind was a really exciting burgeoning art scene that was happening with like Tokyon Magazine and Giant Robot, a lot of things out of LA, out of the Mission School, out of New York. there just was sort of a lack of youth culture here. And I elected myself the person to fill that gap. Mm-hmm. It was really a harebrained idea. And I did do some of the things you're supposed to do with a business. Like I wrote a business plan, but I really winged it. I just made it up. And I think a lot of that came from having courage, from having lived in a city that was, you know, Olympia, that was just known for making things up and for believing that kids could do stuff.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of a grand experiment, and a lot of it went really well. I put on over 50 art exhibitions. I worked with over 100 artists from all over the world. I did art fairs in Miami and LA. It was a really exciting thing, and I really did feel this nice reciprocity. I felt like I was, you know, working with the community here to really help develop artists, and I felt like I was sort of exporting that and then also importing artists from other places, like really creating sort of a dialogue and mm-hmm. a context.
You also did something I noticed called the 40-40 project.
Oh yeah, we call it 40 under 40.
40 under 40. Why don't you tell me about that briefly?
Sure. That happened in 2006. That was again with my friend Laurel, who was a fellow gallery owner, and our friend Laura Whipple, who owns a print shop in town called Pinball Publishing. That's really great. And we... how did it start? I think it started because we were trying to think of ways that we could promote our businesses that were not just PR and marketing, but kind of like a more organic and more community-based and a more innovative way. And so we hatched this series of dinner salons, and we wanted to have a guest list of 40 people who were under 40 years old, and we wanted to keep the price tag at $40. And We did it. We did three events. The first one happened at Ripe, back when Ripe still existed, which was Naomi Pomeroy's beloved restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun. And it was a really eclectic group of people. We tried to keep the selection curated to people who were self-employed and creatives. And so we didn't want to just open it up to anyone who was young and a creative professional, but really people who were trying to make their own living. And we had a really cool group, and a lot of those relationships have even sort of grown since that time. And then we did two more? Maybe we only did one more with Navarre Catering in the Artemisia Garden, which is over near Navarre. And they were just sort of a fun plan. And they didn't end up continuing beyond that because we all moved, or because Laurel and I moved and Laura stayed here. So that was the end of those. But I still love that idea of a salon and of, you know, there wasn't really much of a agenda or a purpose beyond getting people together around food to have sort of a communion and a community and conversation and just see who connected and who gravitated and what relationships sprung from that.
I love that idea. Have you considered doing something like that again?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So stay tuned, everyone. Although I'm now 40, so I would never be...
Maybe I'll have to be 40 over 40. We're all getting old.
That's funny. And currently, it seems like you're doing you've been doing a free advice series.
Yes.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Free advice is a performance I do, and it started 3 years ago. I do it at National, which is a gallery run by a woman named Mae Barrowell. It's down on 8th and Burnside across from the Doug Fir. And the idea was really hatched with Mae, and she's been just a great supporter. When I got back from New York, you know, I was just wanting to play. I wanted to play with some new ideas. I felt like I had to take a lot of things really seriously. And free advice was this opportunity to play with this idea of sort of formalizing this thing that was already happening. I was having a lot of people come to me for advice. In general, I just do have a lot of people come to me for advice, and mm-hmm. I feel pretty comfortable in that role. I'm pretty good at it. And so Mae and I hatched up this free advice, and at that point I was sort of really diving deep into personal growth and, for lack of a better word, like self-help, but just reading a lot of different books on a lot of different theories and ideas about well-being and growth and spirituality and, you know, hero's journey type of things. And free advice gave me this formal process and a way to apply all this stuff I was thinking about beyond just personal growth. And so it's a performance that happens. It's usually 2 or 3 hours, depending on what we schedule it to be, on a Saturday, usually at the gallery. And I go in and set up 2 chairs, and there's a little TV tray between us. And anyone can come in, and we'll talk about whatever. So it's wide open. The whole essence of the project is on the free flow of ideas. It's on trusting intuition. It's on the courage that it takes both of us to show up and talk about things in public. Most sessions, now we've put a cap on them. They last 10 minutes, but I've had some in the early days that would last like a half hour.
Right.
I've talked about a lot of different things with people who come in. I had a guy who came in one of the early sessions, and he was like, I'm really worried about the fact that I am drinking a lot of juice. And I was like, okay, let's talk about that. You're drinking a lot of juice. And I was like, okay, so in my brain, I'm like, juice is sugar, right? It's calories. I was like, are you eating 3 meals a day? He was like, no. I was like, oh, I think you might be hungry, you know? And juice is a way that you're getting the calories. And he was like, yeah, I moved here from Chicago like 6 months ago and I never unpacked my kitchen. I was like, oh, okay, maybe it's time to start cooking and eating meals. He was like, yeah, I think I need to go buy a pot. I don't really have a pot. And I was like, that's a great idea. Can you go to the Goodwill and get a pot? He was like, I can do that today. I'm going to do that today. I was like, good. I was like, my challenge to you is to make a batch of soup this week. And I was like, I think you just need to start feeding yourself and you'll notice your juice consumption going down. And he texted me the next day a photo of soup that he had made in the pot that he bought. So I felt like that was quite a success. But again, sort of a left field thing when you think of what would or could free advice be.
Right.
You know, it's been a lot of things. Some people come in with relationship advice. Because of my history working in fine art, a lot of artists come in and want to talk about either how to grow their portfolio, how to how to really develop a strong studio practice, or a lot of them come with tactical career questions of like how to get into galleries or how to be showing their work, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm probably not the first person to mention that. Kind of reminds me of Lucy on Charlie Brown.
Yeah.
Who had that little stand set up and take a nickel.
Is it
it's a one-on-one thing? It's kind of like there's maybe a queue of people and they just kind of take turns talking to you?
Yeah, exactly. Just 2 chairs and whoever wanders in, you know, it happens. It's available for the public. It doesn't really happen. I know sometimes people come in and they think that we're like going to be on a stage and everybody's going to watch. And it's not that, it's not that format, and it's also not that caliber. It's just not, it's not a theatrical performance. It's just a public performance.
Right, right. And how often do you do that?
I try to do it quarterly.
Okay.
It's definitely not on a strict schedule, but I try to do it every 3 months. So I did it last month. We're going to do it again in May. It probably won't happen in summer. I would guess it would happen again then in September.
So if someone comes in to, I'm kind of unpacking this whole concept. So if someone comes in, you're sort of anticipating that they're going to come in with some random question. And you're going to start from there.
Yeah, I'm not a psychic. I have pretty good intuition, but somebody has to bring me a question. I have had people sit down and be like...
You don't just look at them and say, I know what you need.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you'll get there.
I've had a couple of people come in and say, what do I need to know? And I was like, I don't know what you need to know. Like, you gotta give me something to work with.
So we talked last year and you were doing web design.
Mm-hmm.
But you've sort of transitioned past that now. What is it that you're doing now? What can you tell us about that?
I'm doing creative consulting.
Okay.
Which is sort of a natural elaboration of both the things all the things we just talked about, but of the free advice and the web design and the gallery. So creative consulting is a vague and amorphous term and mm-hmm. career in so many ways. And in a lot of ways, it's sort of a made-up job. But what it encompasses for me is stepping into the professional role as an advisor. And it happens that the area that I have a lot of expertise in is like art, design, and creativity. So creative consulting, the way it's set up now, at least with my new business, is that it has 3 different tiers. The first one is working with agencies and studios and consulting with them on client projects, coming in and, you know, just offering kind of an additional brain on a project, doing strategy, doing visioning, helping to get clear. I have a pretty good organizational mind, so it's pretty easy for me to sort out information and look for connections, look for consistencies. Inconsistencies really help agencies and studios.
Kind of with a project that's stuck or something.
I think a lot of creative professionals, there's sometimes the job is messy and it's hard to really sort it out and get to the heart of it and figure out what are the priorities, what are the values, you know, who is this for, where is this headed?
Yeah.
And so that's the piece of the puzzle that I can bring to it. So consulting on vision and strategy, and then also, you know, because of my experience as a designer and with art, I can be consulting all the way through the development of messaging and media. So, you know, I don't want to be doing the pixel pushing myself anymore, but I can be checking in once we've got the strategy and vision in place to see that all the art and design that's being made is continuing to embody those values that were set out initially. So there's like a huge piece that's about integrity and alignment, just really making sure that businesses and individuals are clear about where they want to go, clear about what their values are, and then that is being referenced through everything that comes later.
Okay.
So that's the first tier of it. The second is one-on-one advising and consulting. So that's just working directly with business owners. And, you know, that's less agency, like, quote, creative work, but more working business advising, whether it's business who wants to grow, who needs to transition, who wants to get more clarity themselves, who's wanting to grow their business. Maybe I said growth twice. So,
growing is good when you're in business.
I know that's most businesses want to grow.
Yeah, so. Say it three times. It's even better.
Hence the emphasis. So that's just one-on-one hourly advising, kind of more following kind of a counseling model of just, you know, we show up, we sit down, we start talking, get clear. I give people homework usually, so they have something to go work on after their meeting with me. And those can be, you know, sort of periodic sessions. And then the third tier is teaching and workshops. And that's something I haven't done before, but that I'm pretty excited about. And again, it's all the same information, but it's then kind of packaging it in a new way. So I'm working on a class right now with my friend Liliana, and we've called it Radiant Business, The Energetics of Success. She's a really wonderful woman who's been my teacher for a few years. She's an intuitive counselor, so she has access to kind of a whole other level of information. She's working a lot with energy, with meditation, with visualization. And so she's bringing that part to this workshop that we're going to do, and I'm bringing a lot of tactical information of like, what's a brand, how do we get clear about what your specialty is, how do we talk about that, how do we embody that, where do you want to go, etc.
And would that be like a workshop format kind of a thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this first one that we're doing is a three-week class. So the first one is 6 hours, then there's a 2-hour phone check-in, and then a 2-hour closing class.
Okay.
So I'm excited to see where that goes, and I'm not just excited about teaching that independently, but I can definitely feel an interest in and a pull to be thinking about teaching in other ways too. I have a BA, I don't have an MA, so I'm not qualified to teach at a college level right now, but kind of just over the past couple of weeks for the first time, I'm seeing the way that teaching at a really high level is a nice way to be able to synthesize a lot of disparate disciplines, and I'm kind of excited. I'm definitely excited about the nexus of art and creativity and commerce and communication. And then also, like I said, this piece of like meaning and purpose, kind of like a deeper spiritual level. So, and teaching seems like a neat way to sort of ask deeper questions of how do those overlap and when are they in affinity? When is there tension? You know, where do those different disciplines meet?
Yeah. It seems like the first part of what you're talking about is certainly something I think about a lot, you know, the confluence of all these crazy technologies and all that. But, you know, the meaning and purpose is something that, you know, it's not something that I normally spend time thinking about. So that's definitely interesting. Where do you personally find inspiration for all of this kind of stuff? You mentioned the teacher you've been working with, but is there like a particular you know, source material, stuff that you've been enjoying reading lately, anything like that?
I love this thing called the internet. It's pretty awesome.
Okay. We should get that.
Totally. I think you guys might have it. I see some around here.
Oh.
Yeah. So the internet, you know, of course the internet's huge, but it really is amazing. There's really so much. And Twitter is kind of my favorite social media.
Okay.
You know, you get to choose who you follow. It doesn't have the emotional weight of Facebook. It's not a reciprocal relationship. It's just a way to receive a lot of connections, and it's kind of curated, you know, following the people who you trust and who you like. You can see what they're looking at, what they're following. You know, I've been reading books. I'm reading a book that I just started called The Gift, which has been around for about 25 years.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. It's it's pretty popular. It's a lot about creativity and commerce and this idea that art is essentially a gift. And so how do we resolve that question in a commodified society? How does art live? I'm only 40 pages into it. I'll let you know how it goes.
The answers next week.
Totally. I'm reading this really great book from the 70s called Be Here Now that was written by Ram Dass, who was a man who was an academic achiever from the East Coast, and he was part of the whole academic LSD studies that were happening with Timothy Leary, and he sort of went on this spirit quest to India and made this really beautiful art book about his enlightenment and his consciousness and about working with his guru. It's definitely like of that 60s, 70s trip era.
Sure.
But, you know, I think what I'm absorbing right now, I love pop culture. I watch a lot of Netflix and TV. I'm pretty fascinated with media. I feel like the things that I'm most drawn to in life in general, like I'm always interested in questions of power, of representation, of pleasure, of relevance. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, some of it's grabbing these really niche, way out there, influential nuggets, and some of it is looking at just like what's right in front of us. What are we being spoon-fed? I don't think one is necessarily better or worse than the other. It's like sort of this remix of all of those together.
I think of you as a person who is, and it's interesting you should mention Twitter. I think of you as someone who's great at networking, who knows a lot of people, and I'm sure it's partly because you ran a gallery and, you know, you've done all of these, you've worked in a lot of different areas since you've been here, but how is it that someone who runs a small business or is an entrepreneur or something, how would you recommend they network or get to know people if they don't, you know, have a gallery where they're meeting people all the time or something? What's a good way to get your name around there and maybe possibly find clients or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's about showing up. I saw Snoop Dogg once on MTV or something, and he was like, showing up and blowing up. I was like, there's something in that. there's so much I think it really is just participating. And, you know, the word I would use for myself more than networker is connector. Like, I like connecting. I like connecting ideas. I like connecting people. I like being connected. You know, I think connect with your community. Like, you know, what I love is art, and I like reading too. So two things that are free that I end up going to a lot are art openings, art events, and readings at Powell's. And, you know, just participating in community in that way, you start to see the same people. You start introducing yourself. You start having conversations. You start seeing what's going on around you. You hear of other things that are related to your interests. You know, you can discover new little, for me, it's like discovering new galleries, discovering new exhibitions, or, you know, finding people who are making things in new ways. And, you know, Twitter, like, again, Twitter, just seeing what events are happening, you can kind of see who's going to what, not in a strategic way, but just in a like, oh, I want to be around that. I want to be around those people. And, you know, getting out of the house.
Makes sense. And I think that, you know, another thing I'm observing is that you tend to give. I mean, like, doing the free advice thing is a good example. It's free advice. I mean, you know, people will come for that sort of thing. And we were just talking about that earlier, how how helpful it is to give things when you're trying to, you know, just give stuff away and people will remember it and appreciate it. And
it's a great circuit. It's a great circuit. And I feel like I give my parents a lot of credit for that. They're really plugged into understanding like the cycle of abundance, of contributing, of sharing, of like understanding that in so many ways, none of us actually own anything. We just sort of help circulate it to who needs it and who wants it and who has it and who doesn't have it. And thanks though. That's a great compliment about the giving.
Do you personally, I know that you sometimes when you describe how you network or you find things that are interesting, sometimes it's I'm not sure if you're talking about work or if you're talking about life or the things that you enjoy. Is there a difference? Do you believe that the concept of work-life balance is real or a myth, or how do you feel about that whole thing?
Oh man, that's a juicy question. For me, it's all one. I've been really lucky in that way. My life has definitely been kind of this always problem solving of figuring out how to make it work. But, you know, for 10 years I've been self-employed and I'm 35. So I've been self-employed since I was 24, 25. For me, work and life is one, and especially since ultimately, at the end of the day, I see myself as an artist. So even when I'm doing business, it's art, and it's hard for me to know. It's hard for me to make the distinction between work and life, but nonetheless, it has been really beneficial for me to put some boundaries around work, and I say work in quotations, but there are tasks for me that are undeniably work. You know, I have an office, so going to my office is work. Opening email is work. Replying to email is work. Doing design work, opening Creative Suite is work. And those things I've learned now to do Monday through Friday. I don't do those on the weekends. You know, and I don't work in the evenings anymore either. I used to work all the time. And I feel like, you know, I see you nodding. I feel like I could do that. I could do that in my 20s. And now it just, you know, I feel like I need that time, that downtime, that fertile time to just re-energize, to like have ideas, to be looking at other things that other people are making and enjoying them. And that's more beneficial to the process now than to just keep grinding away.
Right. So like checking, you know, Twitter or browsing the web or something, you wouldn't feel like that was being work if you did that in the evening, because that's kind of...
Yeah, I think, well, and for me, there's sort of a, you know, everybody picks their own boundaries of what makes sense. For me, sure. Like the weekend has become the sacred space. I try not to open Twitter much on the weekend and, you know, send, like, I think most of my clients know that they're not going to get responses during the week, but evenings are sort of fluid. It's sort of like, I usually work till 6 or 7. I'll go to the gym or go to yoga, eat dinner. And then it's sort of like free time. You know, I feel like it's like, do I want to look at Twitter? Do I want to watch a movie? Do I want to read a book? Like, that's just, there's no rules in that time, but it's pretty unlikely that I'd be sending client emails at 9 o'clock at night, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's if you're self-described or if others have described you as and I quote, ranging in approach from mystic to material. Can you elaborate more on that beyond the what we've already talked about? How does the mystic fit in with the material?
Alchemically.
How else?
It was a joke.
For all you mystics out there.
That I know that line is from the press release for the free advice. And so there, I really do think, again, that sort of harkens back to being an artist in essence, or at least that's how I identify myself. And it is this negotiation of this unseen and this intangible quality of this, like, where do we get our ideas as creatives, as artists? Like, they sort of just come. Like, it's, you can't make them come. You can create space for them. But there is this ephemeral quality. And then the material is that we embody them. Like, the artist makes it real. So there's this way in which you're working with tangibles. You're working with mediums, you know, working with whether it's your laptop or paint or writing or, you know, even being in nature. There's a way at which the ideas hit the ground and they're then birthed into something that lives in the world. So, you know, I feel like it's having that tension and that confluence of both of those things happening at once that is how we make stuff.
Gotcha. Do you have a favorite restaurant in Portland right now?
Well, I have two favorites. They're sort of, neither of them are new, but they're my go-tos. I'd say for just a quick casual dinner, I pretty much live at Por Que No on Mississippi.
Okay.
It's a favorite.
Wow.
It's a favorite.
It must be a favorite because I think when we met there like a long time ago, that's where we met. And that was the first time I'd been there. But, you know, Portlanders rave about that place.
Yeah.
And it was very good, I will say.
And it's near my house. When I lived in New York is not... There's just not a lot of Mexican food. There's some Puerto Rican food, Dominican food. There's not a lot of Mexican food, and there's not a lot of cheap, good Mexican food. And I missed Por Que No sorely when I was gone. And coming back, and now I live near it, and it's so delightful in there. I just feel so at home.
I'm starting to suspect you moved somewhere just to be near it.
No, it was just lucky stars aligning. But that's my favorite sort of weekday go-to. And man, I got to stick by Navarre for my all-time favorite. Just so consistent, so good.
Yeah.
I love what John Tabota does. Like, he makes the simplest ingredients taste so sublime. He's so good with just oil and roasting and salt and herbs. And the wine list and the service. My grandparents have all been passed away for a long time, but I like to imagine that if I had a grandma, that would be like grandma's place.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to Luce?
I haven't. I've heard great things, though. Have you been?
Also excellent, yeah.
Yeah.
I wish that our office was near there because they have like a lunch special that's like a, you know, I think it's like a glass of wine and, you know, the sandwich and whatever for... You know, a single figure, I guess you'd say. It's not a lot of money, and I could just see
$1 sign.
Really used to that, yeah.
Yeah, they do great food. There's a simplicity, I think, that John has that I really, really admire.
Yeah.
Have you been to some... What's exciting you right now, right?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I shouldn't answer this because... I'm still really into the equivalent of that for us is Cheese Bar.
Mm-hmm.
It's farther away, I think, probably than Por Que No is from you. I don't know. I mean, it's up kind of in the Mount Tabor area, but that's just like I'm infatuated with that right now. It's a very simple menu, but you know, if you want like to try some just crazy beer with it or wine, that's not a problem. This, you know, you can always get like a cheese board or a meat board, which is nice if you're just like, you want to have a little meeting there, a little chat. So, and their sandwiches are amazing. So I like that. You know, if you're into the smell of stinky cheese during your lunch, it's a great place to go. You know, Country Cat, I don't get outside of a certain radius here much these days. Just really busy with all this stuff, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, those are kind of the places I go to the most. I haven't really been super impressed by anything else I've tried lately.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm waiting. A Little Bird I tried.
Oh, Little Bird is so good.
A few months ago, and that knocked my socks off. I'm scheming to get back down there because that was just so good.
Did you get the marrow?
No, I don't think so.
It's pretty good. I apologize right now to our vegetarian listeners who don't want to hear about bone marrow, but the bone marrow at Little Bird is the jam. It's so good. You get bone marrow is like straight food high. It's so good.
Okay. Well, I will absolutely get that when I go back there, which I'm sure will be soon. I was wondering if you would be willing to take a question from someone here.
Oh, some free advice?
Yeah, do a little free advice on the spot.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Oh, always.
Hello, this is Karina.
Okay. Hi, Karina. How's it going?
Hi, I'm doing very well. Thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I have a question for you. I was listening to the podcast and heard you talking about sacred space. And I feel that, like many women today, I often struggle with the work-play balance.
Mm-hmm.
And as a young creative, I feel that it's really important to take time for inspiration and passion, mm-hmm. and looking for those pursuits to sort of refuel and re-energize. but I often let those things fall to the last on the list. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if you have some creative techniques or some tips that you use to stay inspired and find those boundaries and take that time for yourself.
I think the best tip is to put it on the calendar.
Really?
Yeah. Just, you know, whether it's a regular thing, whether it's daily, whether it's weekly, whether it's monthly, actually, like, write it on your calendar, you know, whether it's Saturday from 9 to noon or whether it's every morning from 7 to 8, you know, whether you're writing, whether you're going for a walk, whether, you know, whatever your particular creative pursuit is. But I think you have to literally make time for it, you know. And when I used to work with artists, that was always, you know, the number one key to success is just having a regular studio practice. You know, you have to prioritize it, and to do that, you have to give it space in your life. Like, you know, if you put it at the bottom of the list, it'll keep falling off.
True.
But if you just build time in, you can build things around it, and I think you'll find the rewards of doing it will make time feel less elusive too, you know, because I think when you're an artist or creative, the time that you spend creating really does re-energize you and makes you feel more prepared and more alive in the other things you're doing in life.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Do yourself keep a diary?
I don't keep a diary, but I'm on a really good regimen right now where I write every morning.
Okay.
I write 1 to 3 pages. Yeah, there's this book called The Artist's Way that became sort of a wildly popular, I don't know if it was, I want to say it's like an Oprah or New York Times, but it was like that vein of like highly mass marketed, widely dispersed book. And she really does have this regimen for kind of how to move through creative blockages, how to cultivate creative flow. And I think that she calls it morning pages, this thing where she suggests you write 3 pages every morning, that you don't censor, that you don't even go back and read them, you just write them and get it out and move on. That's in one of the first chapters of the book, and I have to admit I've probably read like the first 3 chapters. I have no idea what awaits later on in the book, but those alone have been so valuable. So, you know, what I end up writing in the morning sometimes is a narrative recount of what's been going on, and sometimes it's just babble, you know.
Yeah. We're lucky in Portland in that we're not the kind of place where there's a lot of commuting, at least, I mean, maybe if I lived in Beaverton. But I was listening to another show recently where someone liked keeping a diary but couldn't find time because their commute was so lengthy and they had small kids and everything, and they used the same app that I do, which is called Day One, which is just like a little diary app, but with the sort of Siri voice dictation on the phone. They basically, when they get in the car and then start driving, they just hit a button on their phone and then just start dictating, and it would basically transcribe a diary entry. So they just sort of like stream of consciousness, just talk about whatever was on their mind and just, you know, let it all just sit in there and then just sort of read over it later.
I like that
little trick for doing that, which I find that I do sometimes if I'm walking, my exercise is usually walking. If I get an idea, I'll just open that up and then, you know, dictate, and you know, it's okay if it misspells. You can usually pronounce it out loud and figure out what it meant to write, but it's good enough that it kind of works.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to just getting it out. Like sometimes the idea is there's just that traffic jam or that thing that you're hung up on that you can't move past, and it's nice to just, yeah, speaking it or writing it, I found is immensely helpful to just moving forward.
Yeah, agreed. So, Jen, where can people find you on the internet and learn more about you and what you do?
Yeah. Well, they can find me at my website, which is armbrust.co. My last name is spelled ARMBRUST. And it's not .com, just .co. C-O. Yeah. And there's a lot of information on there about more specifics about the work I do with agencies and studios and businesses, and then the one-on-one services and the events and workshops. And plus the website, I tried to integrate a lot of little nuggets and things that are inspiring me. So, you know, I hope that people would find it a fun place to go, even if you don't want to read copy.
The website is lovely.
Aw, thanks.
We're fans here. Great. Well, thank you so much, Jen. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
we're back. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Ray.
So, fascinating conversation with Jen. How are you doing today, Dan?
I'm doing all right. It's warm out and not raining.
It's really nice.
Which hasn't happened in a few days, which is nice.
Yeah, it's going to rain like hell tomorrow, though.
Fantastic. I willingly moved to Portland, Oregon, so like I feel
right,
like I can't
complain
about that. I'm happy.
Bring
about
it on.
It.
Bring it on. All that shit from the sky. I've been listening
it's
to...
It's not snow. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not snow or fire. I don't know. Either way.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I will take rain over fire falling from the sky any day.
Easy sale.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to get the ball rolling. I've been listening to Ethiopeaks, Volume 4.
Really?
I particularly like the first track, Yermo Su. It's Ethio Jazz and Musique Instrumental.
Oh, I'm very familiar with it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm also drinking my Rooibos tea.
Theme afternoon, is what you're saying?
I honestly don't know what I'm talking about.
Is there any coffee from that region?
Probably. It's actually my favorite kind of coffee.
It's a lot of coffee sourced from Ethiopia. So
right. Yeah. And it is my favorite kind of coffee.
Yeah, it's good coffee.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so I'm a real Renaissance man, basically.
We'll have to send Stubbtown an email. Like, we would like a full afternoon or... Can you find some growers in this area?
I think that they know that I like Ethiopian coffee. Have you been listening to anything interesting, or would you care to share?
Well, yeah, I haven't really.
Oh,
is the thing.
Okay,
but I was thinking about that in advance of this conversation, and I realized that the last 2 days I've gotten really excited about two things.
Okay,
music related.
Okay, we have time for one. I'm
all
just
right.
kidding.
One is a story about music, and one is actually music.
Okay, all right, I like this.
Do you have a preferred order?
No, not at all.
I could go either way. I'm prepared.
No. Just start from the top, and when you get to the end, stop.
The thing that yesterday I drove into work.
Okay.
One of the couple days a week that I drive. Mm-hmm. I was driving the car, listening to NPR, as one does. And... Yep.
When your iPhone isn't paired, you just...
Exactly. And Morning Edition did a 7-8 minute story about Enter the 36 Chambers, the debut Wu-Tang album. It's the 20th anniversary. The Wu was on NPR.
Wow.
It was... So I was driving here just giggling. Like, just smiling. Like,
yeah.
Like, they were playing tracks off of the album, heavily edited, I'd imagine. And, like... In the background.
Or not. I mean, it's NPR. Screw it.
The RZA was, being interviewed and talking about, like, the master plan to take over the rap world by getting the Wu on all of the major labels and into as many demographics as possible by splitting up, he signed a deal that allowed, like, the first album to go out, but also allowed for any Wu-Tang member to sign a completely separate album and take the name with them. With any label. So at like within 4 years, they were on like every major label and basically
that's all
crazy.
Making
I've
never
albums.
Heard that. Huh?
Yeah. Like,
okay.
And so, driving and I was just, it was amazing. It was just such a wonderful moment. Like this, it was like satisfying and, I don't know, hilarious hearing what was like this, what felt very like counterculture. When I was like, the first time, I remember hearing that album for the first time and being a little bit scared.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Bring the Ruckus is the first track on that. And I was like, they will in fact bring the ruckus and I will leave. Like, it was terrifying, and like the production's a little terrifying. I've been timing that perfectly.
I just ran into the microphone. Okay. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a grimy album, and it felt horrifying. And now 20 years later, it's on Morning Edition on Monday morning at drive time. Like,
right.
Nationwide. Like, and it's just a thing to celebrate. Like, look at this great business plan that came out of Staten Island. and it's just amazing. It was just great to hear.
Okay. Huh. Can I tell you, I've never heard that album.
You're kidding. Oh, it's
never heard it. I actually think it's been played for me, and I still didn't hear it. It just didn't compute. You know, like, it's like if you're not... There's certain albums, you know, like, I'm sure the first time I heard... name one of my favorite albums, I hated it. Like, I have a long history of hating things, and then slowly... You know, it's like that whole, like first they laugh at you, then they fight you. You know, whatever. I don't know that. Who said that? What am I trying to quote here and failing?
I don't know.
Oh. Okay, well, I'll look that up.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's like eventually I end up loving the thing. So maybe if I start, maybe in another 20 years, I'll be really into it. NPR revisits it in the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Old Dirty was on NPR. Like, they literally name-checked everyone. They were like, you know, the RZA, the JZA, Old Dirty Bastard. Like, the woman reporting the story went through, like, it was crazy. Like, I just didn't...
Speaking of ruckus, I've hit this microphone 3 times now during our conversation.
That is ruckus.
That is crazy. Okay.
I wonder if they did
that. Okay, number two.
Number two?
Yeah.
All right.
Bring it.
I love Fugazi.
Yeah.
They're my Beatles.
Okay.
They're my Rushmore. They're my Rushmore if Rushmore were built out of the Beatles and only attended by the Beatles. They were my... growing up, like, when I first discovered them, they became my alpha and omega of music, you know?
Okay.
And went to see them dozens of times growing up. Then, you know, I grew up...
So that you could afford to do on the East Coast.
Right.
A luxury I did not have in the Midwest.
In Minnesota, yeah. They weren't coming through too often.
Not so often, but I did see them, and it was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
this relates to that. Sort of stopped paying attention. I still love them very dearly, but, you know, they've been broken up for, over a decade now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ian's doing the evens, and there's some other stuff. But haven't been paying attention that much. Apparently Discord, their label, Ian's label, has been putting up every Fugazi show with set lists, photos from the shows, notes, and any of the soundboard recordings they're putting up, making available for download. There are, like, apparently over 800 shows that have soundboard recordings that are not all up yet, but $5 a pop, like...
Oh, that's cool.
I just found out about this recently, and I was just like, sorry, Aaron, my wife. I was like, we're about to be $4,000 poorer. Like, there's no way I'm not just buying them all. Like,
instead of a box set or something.
She literally rationed me. She's like, you can buy this many a week.
Can you preview them? I mean, how do you know if
there's some preview tracks. Okay. Yeah, and
I was going to say, like, people should be able to, like, rate them.
Apparently the band, like, the four of them sat down and listened to as many, like, samples of of them as they could over, like, a period of time, and that's where they got to the $5. Like, it was an average of sound quality. They're like, $5 seems fair for everything that we have. Like, there's nothing worse than that.
Not only that, but $5 is what historically their shows cost, right? Mm-hmm. I'd remember every time the few times I saw them, it was $5, very specifically.
Yeah.
And, like, the venue was never allowed to charge more than $5.
Yeah, they were very staunchly, like, they also almost never played in bars because they didn't want to be tied to alcohol sales. Like, one-to-one, like, ticket prices go up so that you come in. So they were playing, like, weird venues where they could kind of dictate those terms.
That's true.
Yeah.
Shitty venues in Minneapolis. They were always like, where the hell? You got to drive, like, to some suburb, to some, like, abandoned theater where they would play. And my memory of one of them was just randomly someone opened a hose, just started hosing the crowd because it was just, like, so hot in there. They're like, man, we could just hose them. Did you ever get hosed at a Fugazi show?
I did not get hosed at a Fugazi. I've been hosed at shows. Not at a Fugazi show.
The hosing is kind of a rite of passage.
It was in the Northeast. It was usually cold, I guess.
It was probably a hose-worthy show in retrospect.
On a scale of 1 to 5 hoses, where would you put it? Or garden hose to fire hose?
That was definitely... Yes. Yeah, good call. Okay. Wow. Where to go from there? What was I going to say about... I believe next week we're airing our interview with Hutch Harris of the Thermals.
I was sad to miss that. Yes. when you recorded that.
Yeah. But I think that was their third album was produced by...
Brendan Canty.
Yeah. Yeah. Small World.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, probably their most commercially successful or popular or best known... Like, was it? I don't remember the name of it now. The Body, the Blood, the Machine. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, on that note, look forward to our interview with Hutch Harris of the Wu-Tang Clan next week. We'll see you later.